Two games in a week, zero goals conceded, just the one goal scored, and Reading FC continue to nudge into mid-table safety. Welcome to the Tireless Den podcast, episode 229 with the host Mark Mayo this week, where we're talking nudge theory as Reading just keep, you know, nudging. I think it's definitely the right word to say for getting up the table and moving into what is now mathematical safety. We are guaranteed to be in the championship next year. Well, pretty much, because the playoffs, I think, if you're listening to this after about 2 o'clock this afternoon, will be mathematically out of reach as well. And to discuss the 1-0 win at Charlton and the 0-0 draw with Huddersfield, returning, it's been far too long. Dave Handbags Harris, how is it going, mate?
It's all right, not too bad. I haven't liked lockdown too much, but, you know, getting through it. And it was my first visit down the pub last night. So, normality is beginning to the dawns of normality, shall we say.
Yeah, the light at the end of the tunnel. And that's certainly the case with the football team, with that sort of that's eked out 1-0 win, is the way we'll put it. We'll discuss that in a second. Just before we go into the recap, as ever, a big thanks to our sponsor, ZCZ Films, and, of course, to our Patreon campaigners as well, that virtual tip jar just being nudged along just like the team is. We're always very thankful for that and putting it to good use. So let's jump on into the recap then and discuss 4 points in two games for the Royals.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So Handbags, as I said then, we are mathematically safe, Reading 13th in the table as we record here on Sunday lunchtime, with only 8 points off the playoffs, I think we are now. Yeah, just 8 points off the playoffs, although Swansea's game with Leeds hasn't kicked off as we record this. I think if Swansea win that, then it's curtains for the playoffs. And I suppose this restart, we've been a pretty comfortable team, and this week has just emphasised that we're getting the job done.
Yeah, I did have a few concerns after the Derby game about being sucked into it, kind of sleepwalking into it, but into a relegation battle. Bit of a shame that we haven't really, you know, kicked on and you know, made a charge for the playoffs at the very least. But you know, the last three games have shown that we have the basis of a very solid foundation now. Looks like we've the changes made for the Luton game. Evidently they turned out to be the right changes given the scoreline there. But three clean sheets in, you know, defensively, three clean sheets in a row. I can't think of the last time that we actually did that. And I haven't looked it up. So it'd be interesting to find out when that was. We have the basis of a very solid foundation, and it's even more pleasing to have the two academy products in there, Osho and McIntyre. I mean, McIntyre in particular has been a revelation there during the three games. So it's pleasing that we've at least got championship football next season. We don't have to worry about, you know, we know where we are in a financial sense, but we don't have to worry about that massive drop in income that comes with relegation. But you're right to say we're plodding along at the moment. We're just picking up the points with the solid foundation without being spectacular about it.
Yeah, I can tell you actually that I suppose it's to Mark Burns' credit. The last time we kept three clean sheets in a row was in December, actually. So it wasn't. It feels like.
Wasn't that long ago then?
Yeah, okay. It surprised me as well when I heard that, because I suppose that's one of the things about Mark Burns' team is that plodding along does kind of do it quite nicely, because we keep these clean sheets relatively often, I guess you can say. And I think Michael Morrison's been in all of our 13 clean sheets in the league this season. We haven't kept one without him, I think, is basically the stat. And him and McIntyre at the back seems to do quite well. It's Osho as well. He impressed me on Saturday. Sort of the structure of the game was, I think it's difficult to read too much into the various stats of the game, because the structure of the game was we scored after 2 minutes with a penalty that I don't think anyone's going to argue with, nicely taken, that Puskas got another goal. We were decent for the opening 20 and kind of drifted, and Charlton came back into the game. And with the exception of a period of the start of the second half, I think really, it was just a case of nailing down, and against a team that is going to be fighting for relegation, particularly in a home game, which they feel they should have won. It was just a case of battening down the hatches, particularly for the last 20 minutes, and getting through it. And are you happy that, you know, basically we did that? We did it quite well.
We did, yeah. I mean, I don't know if anybody's, well, a lot of people have noticed that the patterns of play have completely changed after the drinks break, particularly in the first half. And that's what happened yesterday. We were very, very comfortable and by far the better team for the first 20, 25 minutes. And it's a bit of a shame that we didn't end up going 2-0 up. I think Mate had a very good header at the far post from a swift cross, which I felt he should have done better with. But from that point onwards, we didn't really have too much in the way of attacking play. Charlton were a lot more enthusiastic in closing us down and playing a more of a running game. If anybody's an NFL fan. Mm. Get the ball wide and run, and particularly in the second half when, you know, Osho came off, he was being given a bit of a torrid time by the Charlton, is either left back or the left winger, who was very, very good at running at the defender, very, very direct, with minimal end product, it has to be said, but he did beat Osho on a number of occasions, and I think that's why we ended up with the more experienced players coming on just to see the game out. And Gunter, I think, had a lot more success against him than Osho was having in the second half.
Yeah, it's interesting. We ended the game with three centre backs on the pitch, three left backs, and a right back. And that's not to say that we played a 7-1-1 or whatever, but because I think it was Obita was central midfield alongside Swift and Liam Moore, I think, with Richards as a left winger in front of Blackett. And I suppose a lot of the argument is was that a good decision? Obviously, with the result it was, but is that how we want to be playing? I suppose you could say it felt to me like it was the way to go, because especially with the context of Charlton being in a relegation battle, they will throw absolutely everything at you. They had nothing to lose, and really, we had Gav Cleary and Lucas Boyer left on the bench, but I don't think there was too much desire, too much necessary feeling for a second goal, because this wasn't, these games, Charlton games in particular, have not been too high scoring. So to see it out, I suppose you have to credit the way the defence did it. And I agree that the Gunter substitution, it was those experienced players that kind of made the difference towards the end of the game.
I think so, yeah. I mean, with every game, you have to react to what's happening on the pitch. And, you know, Charlton were pinning us back. It wasn't so much a case of us, I think, sitting back too much. I think we wanted to play that sort of classic away game. Sit back to an extent, but attack when you can and counter-attack. But Charlton just, you know, they won so much more of the ball when it was cleared, and it would just come straight back at us. And getting those experienced players onto the pitch with their know-how and fresh legs, it kind of worked to an extent. It didn't necessarily stem the flow, but, you know, it works twofold. If it doesn't necessarily work with the ball, then it's going to work in the mindset. And, you know, for all of Charlton's possession, yeah, they had the goal disallowed in the first half and a chance shortly afterwards. But in the second half, for all their possession and their territory, they never really created a chance. And that's testament to the way that we defended, quite frankly. I thought we defended really, really well, and that's positive.
Yeah, there was, I suppose, the dodgy moment of the second half came when Jake Forster-Caskey, a man with a number of famous Reading names in his heritage, went over for a potential penalty. For me, it was a flop and a dive. I think Charlton fans were angry about it. I'd be much angrier about the offside goal they had that was onside in the first half that you just mentioned. But, yeah, there wasn't... You look at the stats kind of play it out, I suppose. We had 4 shots to 16. Both teams only had 2 shots on target, which, you know, tells a big story that you just kind of mentioned. Whether that matters or not, again, context of the game and of the season, I'm not sure it does. A stat that I think is quite interesting is that we put in 15 crosses to their 23, and that at the end of the first half, we were ahead in that stat. So the fact that we both put in a decent amount of crosses shows that, just maybe because we didn't get on the end of them so often, that it's not too much of an issue for me. And as it comes after the 0-0 draw with Huddersfield in the week, this really was a game that drifted by. But again, it does kind of play into the satisfaction, I suppose, that we have two young defenders alongside a couple of very experienced defenders, a very experienced goalkeeper. And from a defensive aspect, at least, it's just working really well. And I suppose it's the story of the second half of the season. It's just about getting that attack working as well.
Exactly. And this is where Bowen needs time, because, you know, it seems like he's suddenly found that solid defensive base. And that's where you build from. When you're building a side, you build from the back, don't you? In a very cliched way.
Mm.
But we've got that. We seem to have stumbled across that formation that works defensively with Rinnanhotta and Pelé right in front of the midfield, right in front of the defence. Sorry, giving them that defensive base. It's then just trying to string that consistent and fluid attack together. And getting the best from that particular formation, and so this is where, you know, Bowen's got his detractors. There's no question of that, and some of that is down to the players. One of the frustrations that I had after the Derby game was that they didn't seem, some of the players, and this is going to be a little, you know, sound maybe sound a little bit brutal, but some of the players don't necessarily have the balls to grab a game by the scruff of the neck, and. We only seem to do it when the chips are down. When we were 2-0 down, we had by far the better of the second half at Derby and probably deserved a point. But, you know, because of that stupid 4 or 5 minute spell just before half time, it lost us the game. And we didn't have a particularly great first half. And, you know, it's a frustration of Reading teams over the last 18 months, 2 years, maybe even longer, that we're capable of playing well, but we're not capable of playing well throughout a whole 90 minutes and dominating a game. And, you know, so if we can't do that, then, you know, let's do it another way. Let's do it, you know, if we can dominate a game defensively, and we've done that in the last three games, then if you dominate a game defensively, it gives you much more of a chance of sneaking a win. And that's, you know, all right, Luton aside, that's what we've done yesterday. And if you're not going to get the win, then, you know, you're more than likely going to get the dour 0-0 draw that we had with Huddersfield.
Which we've had a couple of dour 0-0 draws under Mark Bowen now. And I think it goes on to, for me, it adds on to the basic sentiment that if you're a striker in a team like Reading at the moment, I mean, you know, I've criticised Puskás and stuff over the last few weeks, but the basic fact is if we're relying on kind of 10, 20-minute spells, you know, once a half to get our goals, and the other 10, 20-minute spells we're going to be defending and backs against the wall, it's a hell of a lot easier, I would imagine, I'm not a footballer, to attack in those 10, 20 minutes knowing that you're 0-0 rather than 1-0 down. If you're 1-0 down against, Charlton and they're fighting for relegation, the defence has that motivation, the attack might have that sort of lack of motivation for a little bit. It's a completely different ball game when goals go in. And if you can keep it, you know, 0-0 or whatever for as long as possible, give that sort of basis, maybe make the defence more nervy because they know they've got something a point to lose, or rather than the motivation of being that one goal up, it is a different thing. And I think what we saw against Derby is when we were 2-0 down, we could have a go. And that is the classic case of 2-0 football. When you are so far back, you can give it a go. But when you're just a one goal back, I think it's a different scenario. And that's maybe what we see with Reading when it comes to the 0-0, as we said with Huddersfield, that we just didn't have that extra, I suppose maybe with the 0-0 it is a bit more skill based, but when we are 1-0 down it is more motivation, and that's something the team have to work out. One of the things that we can say for the sort of post shutdown game, the restart game that we've had, is Reading have followed very similar lines to how they were playing beforehand. Home and away splits before the shutdown basically meant that we were better away from home than we were at home. the lack of fans have kind of shaken that around for a lot of teams. But for us handbags, it stayed exactly the same. We're still better away from home than we are at home. Is there any kind of sense to this? Is this just coincidence now, or do we actually have, is there something about the Medeski that's holding us back?
You still have that that need as the home team to be more taking the game to the opposition. And I suppose, you know, maybe we do the same thing as we did before, and it's still doing the same thing, whereas opposition teams, they feel more able without the influence of a crowd and you know, the more level playing field you have. Maybe teams coming to the Medeski are being, more expansive in their play. Certainly can't necessarily say that for Stoke. I thought Stoke were they only really got it together in the last 15, 20 minutes.
And it was a game we really should have won.
Yes, exactly. Huddersfield were I thought they were the marginally better team with the ball, without creating too many chances, I think. I'm not sure you can read a huge amount into it. I mean, it is what it is. You obviously want to have a good solid home foundation to build your season on. Obviously with a better home form this season, we would have had a better season. But I don't think you can read too much into it, to be honest with you.
At the moment, I suppose it's just one of the quirks of the season. Looking, as we might look back over the course of the season, Reading are only two teams have picked up fewer points at home than Reading have, but only six teams have picked up more points away. So it is a bizarre facet that, as you say, for now, we're kind of playing in a bubble and that it won't make too much difference. Since the restart, Reading are a slap bang in the middle of the table, 1-2, drawn 2, lost 2. For the sort of post-restart table. But I suppose going into next season, it's a new season next season. I don't think it's going to have too much of an impact on our home form at the moment, because with the next season, again, is going to be so unique with the fans coming back. The atmospheres, you'd imagine, are going to be better because the fans are excited to be back, whether they're back in, half or whatever capacity to begin with, we'll wait and see. But I suppose for next season, it's just going to be another ball game and it starts again from scratch.
Yeah, pretty much that. Bowen will have some work to do. It'll be interesting to see what we do next season. The financial situation is pretty torrid, really. Looking at the income to wage expenditure, I think it was 220-odd%, wasn't it? But I think we'll see outgoings. Certainly we'll see outgoings. But then, maybe bring in some youth players. Who knows what's going to happen? But whatever happens, it's going to take patience. It's going to take time and patience, because financially the club hasn't been run fantastically over the last 2 to 3 years.
No, that's certainly the case. And let's go on now to listen to Mark Bowen's thoughts after the game and then on into the mailbag.
We had a really good result against Luton, 2 games ago. And, on the day, we won comfortably. But then you look at Luton's, they'd been to Leeds and got some and beaten Swansea. And this league is relentless, and it's such fine margins between every team. That's all it is. Although we are supposedly sitting comfortable mid-table and Charlton look as if, they're in a dogfight, well, if you're not really at it, or things don't go quite for you in the game, you'll get beat. And this is what this league's all about. And if you get beat, you've got to brush yourselves down and go again. But it's trying to get that, like I said, that resolve and consistency in the way you approach games to take something out of every game.
Send in your views to thetarnhurstend@gmail.com and have your say in the mailbag.
Okay, so let's mop up the mailbag questions on the Charlton game first. Got a lot of thoughts as to whether I asked basically, was it an underwhelming performance or a classic away victory? Richard H saying, we've been on the receiving end of that result so many times, it feels pretty good for it to be going our way for a change. Jolie saying, wouldn't say perfect, but it's a fantastic smash and grab away performance. Reading a bit bad at holding on to a 1-0 lead in recent years, so good to see us defend the passion. Luke Rogers saying it's kind of a bit of a both. Quality wasn't there, but the desire was, and we got the result. Ben Lewson saying he loves a gritty win. Ian Frampton saying the table doesn't say how you won, just that you won. Strong defensive performance when we've been so fragile is good. Peace saying good win, but nothing seems to be on offer for next season, just more the same. Once you could see a progressive pattern of play and year-on-year improvement, but not for a while now. Oh well. Matthew Turner saying, I love a sneaky 1-0 away win. Paul Tanner saying, I want to say perfect away win, but I'd be lying. We gave them far too much time and space, which allowed them to build up pressure and get balls into our box. Also, our ball retention, passing and creativity was lacking, but a win is a win. Biscuiteer saying, absolute bitch. So yeah, Handbags, I think just in summary for the good versus bad away win, I suppose what it shows that almost there is no such thing as a bad away win. You can ultimately, fans will be satisfied, and rightly so, I think, you can have even a terrible performance, although I would argue that yesterday was still a good performance. As long as you come away with that win, then that's what goes down in history books.
No, exactly. It wasn't a good performance with the ball, but defensively we were really, really good. I think the interesting one was the chap in the middle there who said that we gave them far too much time and space on the ball. Yeah, to an extent. But you know, if you can defend as stoutly as we did, then you know that's got to be a positive. But with the ball, yeah, we can be a lot better.
Yeah, I suppose we had Ovi Ajayi out with an ankle injury. Michael Olise started and came off relatively early. I think he played quite well. Pele came in, didn't do particularly well. Had a knock at half time, so they took him off. So I suppose with that kind of midfield churn, it is perhaps harder. But yeah, I suppose it's nice to see people saying about the desire with the team and everything like that, because I think the lad who started us off, Richard, saying we've been on the result of that so many times, or the end of, on the wrong end of that result so many times. We have sat here countless times on this podcast and watched those performances happen to us, and we always say the teams that do that result to us have the more desire, have the more motivation. And I think yesterday you could certainly see. Yeah, you know, you could argue it's a nature of the players put in, but also the tactics. And it is nice to see us actually finally pull out those sort of results now. And we're doing it relatively consistently under Bowen.
Yeah, that's right. It's every football fan's frustration is to you know, dominate a game and come away with a defeat, isn't it? So yeah, in that sense, it's really nice.
Moving on then, Jordan Cottle asking, if Obita was a young player or a new recruit and was putting in these performances, would we even be having a conversation about extending his contract? He's done amazing to come back, but looks well short of quality. Ben Thomas asking as well, if you could keep either Obita or Blackett, who would it be? Mark Bowen after the game saying that basically all of these players out of contract at the moment are playing for their futures. He seemed to suggest a kind of blank slate approach that the club are taking, saying he said about a reasonable wage that we would be offering them if we felt they had the quality. That suggests to me that obviously, like Gaffer Cleary, he's not going to get the wages on now because he's getting older. But I think you can maybe assume Tyler Blackett's on a decent wage. Obita might be as well. The terms they're going to be offered, you can maybe eke out from that they're not going to be as good. And therefore, the club are basically saying, well, there's maybe, let's say, hypothetically, there's two contracts out of the five or six that are on offer. Go and earn them. And I think that's probably just about the right approach for now. Can you see any of the players? Can you see a scenario, rather, where none of the players are kept on?
Yes, I can. I mean, this scenario, we were in exactly this scenario, and this is where it's really frustrating looking at the economics of the club. We were in exactly this scenario back in 2015 when the likes of Karachan, Pierce and the like, they left, Federici. I think there's a distinct possibility and probability that the majority of the players that are out of contract aren't going to sign their new contracts. Realistically, though, the likes of, you know, you mentioned Gareth McCleary in there, he's not getting any younger, so he's not going to get the money that he's on necessarily at the moment, unless somebody comes in with a stupid offer for him. But then again, you know, a club may come in and give him a hefty signing on fee on lower wages. So you don't know what's going to happen. But no, there is a niggle in my head that suggests that these players, you know, the more experienced players, aren't going to stay at the club. Those that are out of the contract, I think it's already, isn't it already? Tyler Blackett is already going to go, isn't he? Is he going to? Didn't he sign a pre-contract agreement somewhere?
That was the report, but I would suggest that given how everything's played out, it kind of seems like that's not been the case. He might have had interest or might even have an offer on the table still, but it doesn't feel to me like he signed for anyone else.
Yeah, okay. The long and short of it is that the money that the players are on and the contracts that the players signed, predominantly, I think, under Yapstam and Tavraden and then Ron Gourlay, they're not going to get that kind of money at a club that is so financially screwed as we are at the moment. That's just a simple fact. So it wouldn't surprise me if all of them left and, you know, rejected the contract offers and went elsewhere.
Well, on the matter of Obisa, Jordan's saying whether he's actually, good enough, effectively, whether he's putting in the performances to earn a new contract. I feel like with Obisa, it's a difficult one because removing the shade of longest serving player, academy player, etc., etc., I still do think he has something to offer. And I think Saturday kind of showed that to me. I was impressed with how he came off the bench, I think, and I was genuinely impressed with his performance because you have a player who can play left back, he can play left wing, he's not a brilliant winger, but he's decent enough. He can play central midfield relatively well, as he did on Saturday, kind of moved over late on. I still think there's a lot to get out of Obisa, and yes, maybe the injury and everything means he's not the potential Premier League star that we thought he might have been. Although I'm always wary with these sort of potentials, etc., as they come out of the academy. And if we are going to keep him or Blackett, it's difficult because Blackett is a very decent defensive left back and he can get forward not too bad. Obisa is a bit more versatile. I don't know, if you had to keep one, who would it be?
Jordan Obisa all day long. Blackett has come on leaps and bounds over the last 18 months, but for 2.5 years he was, while he would have a solid game, he would have that horrendous error in him that that would potentially cost us. Jordan Obisa, I think, I get what people are saying to an extent, but has he really been that poor? For me, no, he hasn't. He's never had explosive pace. While he's been reasonably quick, he's never been able to outpace an opposition winger or an opposition fullback. But what he does have is the ability to throw in a very, very good cross without having to take that man on, just earn that yard of space. And he does that so well when he's playing, either as a fullback or a wide player. Yeah, he has a hell of a lot to offer. And the fact that he's that versatile player where he can play either left back, left wing, or in central midfield to an extent, as you say, for me, he's the one that you need to keep and perhaps have, if Blackett's going to go, then, nobody's mentioning Omar Richards here. And Omar Richards is potentially an extremely good fullback. And if he's going to play at fullback and he does have the pace, then he can, potentially, just looking very, very basically at this, he could potentially have that overlapping run to give Jordan Obisa the space to whip in the crosses. That's a very simplistic outlook, but, those two down the left-hand side, I wouldn't have a problem with that at all.
No, I wouldn't either. And if you're talking about a team that's going to win the championship, do I think those left-backs are good enough? Probably not. But a team that's going to challenge for the playoffs that we think we are, or potentially going to be next season, then yeah, I do think you can organise those two well enough. And like you say, there is that versatility option. Richards could even play left midfield if you really want. Blackett, to keep all three, I think is a complete luxury that we simply cannot afford at the moment. And with Obisa, I do think that, yeah, I do think he is good enough, and I don't think his performances have been particularly worrisome or any more worrisome than Richards or Blackett. How good Richards is going to be, I know, again, he's got a lot of people don't like him, a lot of people really like him. I don't think we're going to know whether Omar Richards is going to turn into a Premier League player next season. It will probably be the season after that. Left back, a lot of players need a lot of time to get the defensive nous when they're already quite athletic and everything. So, yeah, these things are going to take time. But, yeah, just the foundation point, I would have to say that if the left backs next season are either Obita and Richards or Blackett and Richards, I'd probably go with Obita and Richards. And hopefully we'll keep one of them. If Obita rejects, Blackett signs, then fair enough, I won't complain too much. But that's the scenario we're in at the moment, where it will be two from three, I think. And, yeah, I think Obita is probably the man I would go for. That's the end of the mailbag, so we will move on now. Sadly, we're going to skip news bites, because unless I'm missing something glaringly obvious, I don't think there's been any news these past few days. Basically, when the club's just playing, and with the transfer market as you know, ticking clock as it is, not started yet, there's just not much news. So we'll jump straight through them to big match preview and the return of Colin.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Handbags, I thought we'd seen the last of him, but Neil Warnock, whether it's the last hurrah, or to be honest, I've stopped thinking this is the last time that we're going to play Neil Warnock, because I know that the year's going to be 2035 and Huddersfield or Nottingham Forest or someone are going to be having a slightly dodgy season near the relegation battle, and they'll wheel in Neil Warnock for the last 10 games of the season to try and save them. And that is exactly what Middlesbrough have done. They're at the Maleski, another 6 p.m. kickoff, Tuesday the 14th of July, and it is the return of Colin.
Yeah, what can you say? Since he managed Crystal Palace the last time, I think it's going to be his last job. And then, you know, and every single job since then has been his last job. And he seems to be, you know, getting another job.
Well, tour is still going on, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, at least he's not going to have, you know, 13,000-14,000 people baying for blood at him this time on his visit to the Maleski. I think that's one positive for him. It'll be interesting to see how Middlesbrough do. What did we do? We lost up there, didn't we? But I'd say that was a game that we probably should have won. They're going to be a very different beast under Warnock than what they were under Woodgate. Not a lot to say, really. Just go out there and hopefully we beat them.
Yeah, well, six straight defeats we've had now to Middlesbrough. So it's been, last win was October 2015 under the heady days of Steve Clarke's very brief playoff push back in 2015. So
was that a 2-0 win, was it?
Yeah, first minute and last minute, basically.
Yeah. When Nick Blackman's only run of goal-scoring form in his whole career.
Yeah, they, as I say, heady days they were. So replicating that, be very happy with. Boa have been really inconsistent actually last few weeks. Lost 3-1 to Bristol City on the weekend. I presume they're travelling down on the day, which probably won't help them. But then they did win at Millwall the other day, so who knows? As you kind of alluded to there, this is a classic game that you really don't know how to predict, because Middlesbrough are probably going to be either brilliant or terrible. It's going to be that straightforward. When they're in a relegation battle, they might come and do a sort of Huddersfield and be pretty solid and unspectacular. I'd imagine that Reading are going to be pretty solid but unspectacular. I personally wouldn't make any changes to this team. We said that Osho struggled in the last few minutes against Charlton, but I'd start him again.
Yeah, I would as well.
Ijari is probably not going to be back. I think he's back for the weekend. They've got a bit of a knock. Generally speaking, I think this game is just kind of set up as we all expect it to be.
Look, it's got the makings of not being a classic, has it? I think it's going to be not too many goals. Two teams who are, particularly Middlesbrough, who will be going for the win, but they'll be bloody scared to lose. simply because of the situation that they're in. Yeah, they're going to come at us, I think. So, you know, it's going to be Warnock football. It's going to be very direct. It's going to be a lot of second balls. We've got to play the way that Bowen, you know, started out like, you know, just by saying that we want to be a more nasty team to play against. It's going to be that kind of game, physical. And when you get that kind of game, there's not going to be a huge amount of quality on show, I don't think. Simply, that's the way the games pan out. So, but having said that, Middlesbrough, they have got some exceptional players. And Britt Asombalonga in particular has a habit of scoring against us. Mind you saying that, he has a habit of scoring against a lot of teams. So, you know, it's going to be a difficult game, whatever. But, you know, it doesn't matter where they are. They've got good quality in their side, and they shouldn't really be where they are, Borough, given the quality that they've got. So, but with Warnock being in charge, yeah, it's not going to be a pretty game.
Yeah, you look down the team: Patrick Roberts, Johnny Howson, Rudy Castell, Asombalonga, you said, Adam Clayton. These are all, generally speaking, pretty decent Championship players over the last few years. So, I must say, I share the pessimism. Middlesbrough's games, if you look over their results, do seem to have a few goals in them. But when it comes to predicting this, I am going to go for a straight up 0-0. Because I really do believe that our defence is strong and they're near Warnock. And that's how things go 90% of the time when you put those two things together. Your prediction league run, Handbags, has actually not done you too bad at the moment. You're on 16 points with your 3-1 parade, as it were. So are you going to be going for the same again?
Yeah, I'm not going to change the habit of a season. Yeah, we're going to go 3-1.
It's a great experiment, really, because if you think about, you know, all the chopping and changing that you do with your predictions over the year, if you just keep predicting the same result and it turns out you do pretty well, it's kind of put a bit of a spanner in the works for a lot of people, and they're kind of maybe second guessing themselves.
Yeah, there's a slight degree of positivity to it at the start of the season, but it just turned into why change it? I probably should have just looked at the most popular result throughout the annals of all time and God with that. I think it's is it 1-1 or 2-1? 2-1 home win is the most popular result. I'm not sure, but I should have just gone with that, really, shouldn't I?
Well, I think with Reading games, certainly under Mark Byrne, a 1-0 home win is usually, or one, maybe even 1-0 away win is certainly the way to pick for popular results. But yeah, I think this game, really, it's just going to be one of those, perhaps one of the teams is going to turn up and be a little bit dodgy, but generally speaking, these are two pretty well-organised teams, you could say. 80% of the time, Middlesbrough obviously a bit inconsistent, but Warnock is going to get a good handle on that, you would imagine, sooner rather than later. And if it is a 3-1 home win, then it will certainly be plenty entertaining, unlike our slight scepticism here. So that draws to a close episode 229 of the Tyler Sen podcast. Handbags, a delight to have you back.
No worries. Thank you very much. Pleasure.
And we shall be back next week, Reading with Middlesbrough and then Blackburn on the weekend. So perhaps not the most glamorous of ways to slowly see out the season, but we are chugging along now with three more games left. The Championship status is basically 99.9% confirmed now. Reading can sit back and just gather a little bit of momentum now for next season as we play the last handful of games. Until next time, it's a pleasure, as always, to have you listening. Come on, your arse.
You smile. you smile. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail, even when it seems higher.